Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right, 6 past the hour. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor and lurking conservatives. How are you people out there? How are you, Mark Riley?
Doing great. How you doing?
Well, it's Wednesday. I'm all right. I had a little trouble getting up this morning, maybe because of all the chocolate I ingested yesterday because of this gift package that was sent to us by some friends of the show who sent an email because I thanked these guys. I thanked Charlie and Jennifer of San Jose, California for the amazing good dive a gift package, but this is the thing that kills me, dude. This is a guy that really understands where a lot of my momentum comes from, okay? Here's basically this email he said. He said, "You're welcome for the goodie basket. Over the past 20 months, you've provided my wife and I more laughter, information, and inspiration than can be adequately expressed by mere words. Listening to Morning Sedition transformed me from an apathetic yet fundamentally progressive cynic into an energetic, passionate, and active participant in our flawed democracy. Morning Sedition also got me through my anger, rage, and depression after the election." Now, here's where it gets interesting, because he says, "Like you, I'm a 40-plus atheist punk, recovering alcoholic, 9 years on 1121, cat person, only two. When does one go from cat person to crazy cat person? 6-plus? Okay, question mark. I'm a fairly thin runner." Here's where it gets interesting to me. "I'm a fairly thin runner, but I'm constantly obsessing about my weight and reminiscing about my fat childhood." Okay, he says, "I do my stand-up in front of a jury. My wife and I are public defenders." All right, so this is a guy, a kindred spirit with me, obsessing about his weight, even though he's not fat because he was a fat kid, sent me a bucket of chocolate. Okay? A bucket of chocolate. There is more chocolate in that gift basket than it's going to take me at least 3 days to eat all of it. Do you understand? At the pace I'm going right now. And you can tell just by the tone of my voice. So this is a guy that says, "I want Maron to be fueled with the self-hatred necessary to get him through this last 10 days. So if I figure if I get him a bucket full of chocolate, there's no way that guy's not going to be a live wire because he's going to be jacked up on sugar and chocolate and he's going to be hating himself the entire way, just fueling the momentum necessary to get through these last 8 shows. So I appreciate the understanding. I appreciate the letter. And you're a deep guy because you got me. I'm sitting here with Ghirardelli chocolate squares right now. I've already eaten one. I had two Godiva chocolate cookies. And I'm ready to go, Riley. And by the
you're
way...
ready to go? Where are you going?
Well, I'm going right here. We're traveling today.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
There was 25 pounds of food in that basket, and about 22 of them were chocolate-related. Chocolate-related food.
Yeah.
Now, dig this, man. I didn't win the lottery, but I now understand the bug. I understand it. You buy the 10 numbers for 10 bucks, $50 million. When you get the numbers that did win, you're sitting there matching, you know, there's that rush. That rush, like, I'm close, there's a 2, there's a 7, ah, there's a 5, oh! And I felt it. I felt it, man. I lost.
You lost?
Lost it.
So, well, how much did you put into it, though?
How much did I put into it?
Yeah.
I put in $10. But there was part of me that said, hey, dude, it's the outside chance to dream, the hope. It was right there. Freedom, Riley. Freedom was right there. A life where I would not have to ever worry about money again. I could just travel and sit by myself and contemplate without bitterness.
Well, you know, everybody who has ever played the lottery has shared that same...
Exactly.
The same thing.
Could you imagine sitting... Well, you're not like me. You're not like me in that way. Could you imagine just sitting with yourself comfortably with no noise, no distractions at all, and not saying, damn it, what the hell happened? Can you imagine just having the freedom of mind to not reflect in a cynical, bitter way? Yeah, I mean, it's easy for you to imagine. You don't do that, do you?
No, I don't.
Never?
Never. Ever.
Did you used to?
Nope.
Really?
Never.
Huh.
I was always a little different than that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you do when you sit? If you're just sitting by yourself with nothing going on, zero, what are you thinking about usually? Something to eat or?
No.
No?
No, I've always thought about kind of larger, stranger issues.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The big picture?
The big picture. Why do people compose particular types of music? What was going on in Charlie Parker's head when he improvised? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I do a little of that myself. But then it eventually gets around to, why am I not Charlie Parker?
No. I know. Look, there was only one Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
There was only one Link Wray.
And there's only one Mark Riley. And there's only one Mark Maron. And we're doing...
Actually, there's more than one Mark Riley. I got to tell you this. When I went to that wedding in North Carolina in October, one of the people in the wedding party was a guy named Mark Riley who happens to be the University of Pennsylvania's tennis coach.
I just pictured several Mark Rileys going, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you just see like an army of Rileys?
Look, almost all of them are black, too. That's the amazing part.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. Well, you know, but you know where your family comes from, right?
Absolutely.
Food, Scotland, right?
Well, Dundee, Scotland, Liverpool, and Wilmington, North Carolina.
All right, let's see if we can get into some news here. Saddam Hussein stealing the show in the courtroom.
Not him again.
Stealing the show, though, guys. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's shouting outside after the trial yesterday. I will not come to an unjust court. I will not come back. Go to hell. Today does not come back. The guy doesn't show up. How is that possible?
I don't know how it's possible, but, you know, I wrestled with my feelings about Saddam all day yesterday. I really did. Now, you want to talk about what I think about? I thought about, like, why am I so drawn to the notion of this guy being this defiant, this hard? The guy is, by all accounts, a mass murderer. Or at least presided over him.
He's reinventing himself.
He's not a great guy.
No,
but I mean, you look at him in courtroom, and he has taken over this trial more than the prosecutor, more than the judge, more than any of his defense attorneys. The trial is Saddam.
Well, the reason why I think that there is a begrudging respect for that type of behavior is in the same way that anybody you respect rugged individuals, people that speak their mind, people that are originals. There's no question, despite the fact that this guy's an evil dictator who was guilty of genocide.
Yeah.
He's definitely standing his ground and saying, you know, despite everything, I know I'm going to die, but screw you.
You know what would be, I think, a better penalty for Saddam Hussein than the death penalty is just keeping him away from cameras forever. Just never having him expose himself to the world again.
Apparently, if you just don't allow him to smoke or change his clothes, that would be enough.
Take away his Doritos, he's done.
Yeah, Doritos and Kit Kats is what this guy likes. The interesting thing is the megalomaniacal narcissism of this cat. And I think we should talk about this issue a little bit more in depth in just a few minutes. But let's hold on to it. Let's talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton. She's being followed.
Yeah.
A collective of anti-war activists from several groups has vowed to pester and protest Hillary Clinton until she stands up against the war. Members of Code Pink are planning on following Clinton wherever she goes. They were supposed to be at an event here in Manhattan last night.
They were.
Did they disrupt?
No, they didn't disrupt, but there were like 75 protesters. By the way, this is only a few blocks from where we are now.
Yep.
But ironically enough, she wasn't at the event.
Just Bill.
Bill was the keynote.
So they have vowed to be in San Francisco when she goes there on December 20th. They want her to state clearly that she is against the war and support bringing the troops home. Now, this is the interesting thing. These Clintons are very good at this triangulation thing, because a lot of people, I think, are reading this correctly, and when they say that Clinton, this is the best thing that could happen to her. She's just going to let them, you know, rant and rave and then define herself as a moderate by standing up to them. The more they stand there, the more she looks like the moderate that she wants to look like. The centricrat, the spineless Democrat who is not willing, even at a time where public opinion is against the war, to stand up against the war and stand up for democratic values.
Well, see, you know, some cynical people would argue that Hillary would get some people to join the protesters, because it really does help her with the center that she's trying to reach out to. The problem is, and this is a problem not just for Hillary Clinton, but for all the Democrats, there is this sense that the Democrats blow it. And when I say blow it, I'm talking about the chance to win elections, the chance to retake Congress, by playing to their, quote, liberal base. And this, by the way, Mark, has hurt us from the day this network came on the air.
Right. Okay. So liberal base is one thing. But right now, I think it seems that most Democrats are just scared to pull the trigger on really standing up against this war, because they don't know what's going to happen. There's still a couple years before the presidential run. She doesn't want to look like she's willing to hedge her bets at being hardlined for the war, at least supporting what is going on at the time being, is going to, in the long run, help her more than speaking out against it in any defined way.
Well, see, what we're looking at now is a very specific component of the war, the pullout. When do American troops get out? And that's the issue that is splitting the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton, and the protests against Hillary Clinton are around the notion that she will not support any kind of timed withdrawal from Iraq. That's
right.
The issue.
Right. Well, Russ Feingold is going to be on our show tomorrow, Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Who is shamelessly against the war and has been from day one, and he's going to react to the president's speech today with us tomorrow morning. And you know what? I've got a way to get the troops out. It's dramatic. It's extreme. It's provocative. And I'll tell it to you in a second. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio. another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
We are here in New York covering the convention, and fortunately, we're lucky enough to have somebody who's getting started in journalism. Our intern, Jesse, is on the streets of New York covering the convention. Jesse, how are you?
I'm great.
Hey. So how is it down there? Is there a lot of traffic? Is it busy? Can you feel the excitement in the street about last night's speeches? Or
I don't know, Mark. I mean, excitement's boiling over.
So really?
There's nobody down here. It's not even light yet.
No, I know, but I bet you can feel it, though. Do you see any people around? Maybe we can talk to some people about the reaction to the speeches. Any politicians down there or anything?
I got a guy setting up a fruit stand.
Well, then maybe we'll talk to him later. Let's let him get set up. Maybe we'll get him in the next hour. I'm sure he's
Mark,
got a...
Mark,
yeah.
What are we doing? This is stupid. I mean...
We're covering the convention, Jesse. Look, you know, you're an intern. What's with the attitude?
Yeah,
you know
really.
What I mean? You have an opportunity here to cover a national Democratic convention.
For Christ's sake. This is New York, Mark.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's national.
Can I come upstairs?
No.
All right, yeah. You come
no, up. Stay there.
Yeah, yes. Stay down there.
Talk to the pigeons if you have to, but talk to something.
Yeah, what's with the attitude of these? All right, we'll get back to Jesse in a minute. Find some news.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
That was Jesse Summers, of course, who now has moved up to work on Rachel's show and is leaving on Friday to go to law school because he thinks that's going to save him. But look, folks, I'll tell you something. I'm looking at the Saddam Hussein trial. I think we're going to need to talk about torture because there is torture on trial here. And it's interesting to me, ironically, there is torture on trial in terms of making the case against Saddam Hussein in terms of his genocidal or his mass killing of 140 people as a reprisal for an attempted assassination on his life. But everyone is talking about being tortured and how horrible it was to be tortured at the hands of Saddam Hussein. And yet we have a Secretary of State going to Europe to sell torture as being okay. But before we get into that, let's talk about what Riley and I were talking about. Saddam Hussein is actually stealing the show. I mean, this guy is so self-involved, so narcissistic, so megalomaniacal. It is very interesting. A man who testified anonymously on stand spoke of his abduction by security forces, how his family was abducted, how he spent 11 months in Abu Ghraib. His father died of being beaten on the head. He spoke about how he had clips attached to his ears, and Saddam's thugs shocked him if he didn't tell them what they wanted to hear. And the man's testimony... This insanely dark, deep, horrendous testimony provokes Saddam to shout, "Does anyone ask Saddam Hussein whether he was tortured, whether he was hit?" And he's yelling at the judge, saying, "It is your duty as a judge to investigate the crime at the scene." That's selfish. And he's speaking to himself, about himself in the third person, which didn't work for Bob Dole. I don't think it's going to work for Saddam Hussein. But this is my provocative plan, Riley. I say Saddam should announce that he's running as a write-in candidate in the elections on Saturday. I say the best way to get the troops home. So say, hey, we screwed up. Put him back in power. We know there's no WMDs. We know exactly the status of everything in Iraq. They should align themselves with Saddam Hussein. See, and you say it's water under the bridge. Get all the troops out and say, okay, start over.
You know, this is the kind of talk that gets us in trouble. You know.
Good. Thank God. I got a week and a half left. Some trouble would be fine. It takes Tim Robbins to tell Hillary to kiss his butt for us to get one bit of press in 2 years. Yeah, but I say bring Saddam back. You know, let's say it's water under the bridge and just make him president. Let's bring the troops home and say we screwed up.
Sorry, Saddam. My bad. Go ahead.
Wouldn't that be amazing? It's funny just to think about it.
Yeah, it is. But you see, there are people in Iraq, and it's amazing because Iraq, in a certain way, is just like America. Everybody's got opinions about Saddam. Everybody's got opinions. In Iraq, you've got people that say, don't even bother. Let's get a lynch mob together, and let's do him now. There are other people that say he should be back in power. And there are all shades in between those two opinions.
Look, some guy said, I took a quote out of this article. One guy said, quote, this is called the trial of the century, but I think it is the comedy of the century, and Saddam is its hero, end quote. This is amazing, Riley. From genocidal dictator to comedic hero in the eyes of the world. I mean, talk about reinventing yourself. You know, I just, it's mind-blowing to me because if you're having the reaction you're having, because he's been given this opportunity to steal the show, to get his chops back, to get his riffs together. I mean, at first, you know, when they first captured him, yeah, I never thought he was going to transcend the rat hole thing, the spider hole thing with the hair and the lice and the looking for the in the long beard.
Absolutely.
But the first time he came out a while back after they captured him, the first time he appeared in court, he was like, you know, I am Saddam Hussein, the president of Iraq. Bam. But he's still a little dicey. But now he's had some time to get his tyrant riffs back. You know, he's back on his mark. He's waving his fingers. He's playing to the full house. He's scaring the hell out of people. His half-brother, who was the head of his intelligence agency, is literally...
spat at somebody in the gallery yesterday.
Right. I know who you are.
Yeah, I know who you are, and it wouldn't be hard to find out if I didn't know who you were. And it's all about the notion that he might come back. That's the fear of a lot of people, that there may be... something will happen. Somebody will shoot a rocket at the place, he'll escape, and he'll come back to run the country.
Well, that's why so many people are just sort of like, kill him. Just kill them. Why are they dragging this out? Why do you think they are dragging it out? To prove that they are a civilized democracy in the making, Riley? Is this some other botched attempt at the Americans trying to place a system on a country that is not used to this system? I mean, can we blame the Americans for this charade that is this trial?
No. As a matter of fact, I think that this is in fits and starts the beginning of an Iraqi democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, all of this theatricality, all of this foolishness, which, by the way, we have experienced in our own trials here in the United States in the past, folks, all of this stuff is a baby step toward actually putting together a judicial system that is somehow modeled on, you know, not necessarily a presumption of innocence, but certainly giving someone a fair trial and an ability to refute charges.
So symbolically, whether or not Saddam Hussein becomes a folk hero again, or whether or not his sympathizers, you know, rally around him in some way, it is clear that he is never going to be president again. He is going to be executed. But this charade, whether he becomes a clown hero or not, is basically, he is the baptism and fire of the new Iraqi legal system.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah.
I can see that. So let's talk about the issue of torture, because there is so much torture being talked about in the trial of Saddam Hussein, and you can really hear how horrible and heinous it is. Yet we have Condoleezza Rice in Europe defending torture on behalf of the American, of the neocon death cult's universal law. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Hey, we got our intern Jesse on the street covering the convention here in New York City. Jesse, how are you?
Unbelievable, Mark. I'm great.
What's going on out there? Is it really picking up? I mean, it must be. You must feel the energy in the air now. Is traffic backed up because of the convention?
Fine, I'll play. Yes, Mark. The mood is tense down here. As people from New York City could care less about what's going on in Boston.
I don't understand the attitude. I'm trying to give you an opportunity here. You're a reporter. How about give me someone to talk to? Just give me someone to talk to so I can have a guest.
But there's no... Okay, fine. Hold on a second. Excuse me, sir?
There we go.
Now we got something going on.
Who am I talking to?
This is Mark Maron at Morning Sedition.
Is this Mark?
Yes.
What are you doing?
What do you mean, sir?
Why are you playing these games? Talk about the issues.
I don't understand.
We're fighting for our lives here. Do you understand? You're playing these games. You need to stop playing these games.
Do not
put me on the air. I will not go on the air. Do not put me on.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Jesse. I appreciate
nice work.
These games.
Of all the people he can find on the streets of New York, who does he find but the issue guy?
Why don't we talk about the issues? We're fighting for our lives here.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Wow, 35 past the hour. Boy, those were the old days, Riley.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that guy that we never got on the air, but we made, I took his voice off of, it was translated to me by Brendan. And I think of Larson, and then it became this thing, and he never once called and got on the air, that guy.
No.
I wonder if that guy's still out there. I think it's time that he get on the air. Are you out there, sir? Why aren't they talking about the issues we're fighting for our lives here, guy? Are you out there? Call us at 866-303-2270. Witness after witness in the Saddam Hussein trial spoke of their torture at the hands of Saddam's security agents. It is very ironic to me, Riley, that what is being discussed in the trial of Saddam Hussein as evidence building a case for mass murder is exactly what the neocon death cult is defending with Condi Rice's trip to Europe. The type of contempt felt in those that lost loved ones or were tortured at the hands of Saddam's henchmen is vengeful and murderous. It's a desire for justice. This is the legacy of torture in those that were not killed. What do we think torture will yield in the organized jihadist community? How can they see it as anything more than something that fans the fires of radical jihadism?
That's a very good question. Obviously, Condoleezza Rice has no answer. She went over to Europe. She's still in Europe, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And is essentially saying to people, well, no, we don't torture, but we will if we have to.
Yeah, and then she starts talking about law. We'll do what's within the law, yet they're defining the law. They are saying what the law is.
There is no law.
The neocon death cult is, as it's very vague. Apparently, there's several different degrees of torture from my reading here. ABC News got the scoop on the black sites that we were talking about. The U.S. hasn't just been outsourcing jobs, but it's been outsourcing torture. And now we've talked about this before, but with the revelation of the secret CIA torture prisons in Poland, Romania, Thailand, there's now evidence that actual subcontracted torture factories in countries that seek favors and relationships with the U.S. are out there.
Yeah.
And apparently, preparing for Condoleezza Rice's trip, this according to CIA agents who anonymously spoke to ABC, that all these black sites snapped into action, got all the detainees out of the European black sites before Condi showed up. So, before she showed up, they had to basically lie about their existence, and they were all moved to a new torture factory in the North African desert.
Yeah, and see, this is the kind of thing that is eroding Condoleezza Rice's credibility as she moves through Europe trying to restore America's credibility. A lot of people inside, particularly Western Europe, Britain, Germany, Italy, these other places, Italy, by the way, who got burned by our CIA just a couple of years ago on some of these things, they're all now coming together saying, look, you know, we're not really buying this notion that America does not torture. We are not buying the notion that America is, and see, this is the thing that's scary.
Yeah.
The notion that America is somehow different and better than everybody else in, you know, conducting itself around the world. And that's what Condoleezza Rice is trying to reinforce, and it is not working.
Well, it's just fascinating to me that we talked about yesterday how the spokesman for the German intelligence agency said that they had a log, basically, of 400 of these overflights or flights that were dispatched of CIA planes to different torture sites.
Yes.
That extraordinary renditioning is what it's called. It's been going on for a while now, and that they have different places where they send people for different tortures. Apparently, there are degrees of torture, not unlike massage. You know, depending on how deep the secrets are assumed to be, justifies to them how hard they'd want to torture these people. Now, the harshest torture is done in the countries that have absolutely no rules about it whatsoever, and those countries are Egypt and Jordan, Morocco, and that's where, you know, these renditioned detainees are sent for extreme torturing in order to get information. Now, there's got to be another way. Holding somebody, if they're charged, there's just this gray area in terms of defining somebody as an enemy combatant or a terrorist to justify doing whatever the hell they want with them. And there's one case here that there's an ACLU suit against George Tenet.
Oh, the El-Masri case, yeah.
Right. Well, this is a great indication of bringing some of this stuff to light in a legal way. We got this from Raw Story yesterday, or I did. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit on behalf of this German citizen, this guy Khalid El-Masri, who was on vacation in Macedonia. This guy's a father of five kids. Married, he's gone on vacation. He was abducted, detained, drugged, and flown on privately owned corporate jets to CIA prison in Afghanistan, where he was held in like a subhuman environment and just, you know, basically coercively interrogated, is how they put it. Tortured. Mm-hmm. He was denied contact with anyone. When he was found to be innocent, The guys who were doing the torturing called George Tenet, said he was innocent, yet they kept him for two more months.
For two extra months. And again, this is what erodes America's credibility. And see, what happens in America, unfortunately, and this is one of the things that hopefully, Mark, if before we leave here, we can change this about the American people. If it's a dozen guys and they're bad guys, and it's not, you know, somebody knocking on their door, Americans will put up with this sort of thing. Americans will say, well, hey, if it's just a couple of guys and maybe we get one wrong, so we say sorry, it's okay to torture.
Yeah, but think about all those stories. Think about even a movie like Cape Fear. Think about being, he was guilty, obviously, but the type of spite, the type of resentment that builds in certainly someone who is innocent and put into this predicament. If you watch that movie, The War Within, which I recommend highly, it's about a guy who was a secular Muslim who was kidnapped. He was abducted in an extraordinary rendition, tortured, held captive, and abused for months on end. His only other cellmate was a radical jihadist, converted him. He became a member of a terrorist cell in New York. Now, granted, that is a fiction. But if you think about yourself, if you think about if you were held, you know, in a situation, even if you were just put in jail for something you didn't do, the type of resentment, you know, if you were not a spiritual person, or you were allowed to let that malignant resentment run wild. Imagine if it was justified by jihadist ideology. Imagine you were held for 12 months, tortured, you did nothing, and the type of anger that you had, that you were able to justify through a jihadist ideology, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you recruit other people? I mean, that is the real downside of torture, is that every time you torture somebody, even if it's a mythic to the people in a community, if someone is taken, even if they're guilty, and they know that guy's in prison being tortured, how many people in the village or wherever in the community are going to be like, they shouldn't do that to that guy? And that, because of rallying around somebody they know who is being tortured, will become a part of that ideology.
Well, you know, we also ought to start asking ourselves, now, what makes us different from Saddam? If we pursue this path to its logical conclusion, then is it only a matter of degree? Saddam slaughters 140 people and we torture 12? Does that make everything okay? Does that make us better than him?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, what would happen if George Bush was driving through a town in Connecticut and 12 guys from the bushes shot out his motorcade?
Yeah.
Okay, what would happen right after that? Yeah, I tell you, an army of CIA people and White House intelligence would corral that town up and interrogate everybody till they found what the conspiracy was. They would hold those. They wouldn't kill people, obviously, but the process of investigation is not that different.
No, it's not that different. It's not that different if a cop gets killed in most jurisdictions,
exactly,
in this country.
Right.
But, you know, the interesting thing about Condoleezza Rice, getting back briefly to the black sites thing,
yeah,
the interesting thing is that it is not just the leftists of Western Europe that are questioning what she's saying.
Yeah.
You have in Germany, in England, in all of these different countries, right-wing and center-right politicians who are questioning just as strongly as a lot of the left is. So it's not just the left wing, it's not just radicals, it's not just social, and it exposes a very, very deep rift between the United States and Europe about how to conduct a war on terror. The Europeans say, look, we've been the victims of terror an awful lot longer than you have. We know how to deal with this. Let us deal with it our way. And America's saying, well, no, we have an overarching way that we want to deal with it, and we want your cooperation in helping us do it our way.
Or else.
And by the way, yeah, before we go to break, I do want to mention, because somebody did send an email from across the pond,
yeah,
over in England, and they're talking about, Mark Reilly, what's all this about Eastern European countries who are afraid of being expelled from the EU if it's found they're harboring U.S. detention sites from here in England? I haven't a clue how Eastern Europe feels, but I have never heard of any possibility or any mechanism for any country to be expelled from the EU under any circumstances whatsoever. And this is from Chris, and he's from England. Chris, thanks a lot for the email. I may have slightly misspoke. It is not that they can be expelled. However, according to United Press International and a bunch of other sources I've checked, under Article 6 of the European Union's rulebook, any state found to be violating human rights, fundamental human rights, and the existence of secret detention centers flouting international law would constitute such a breach, could find itself stripped of voting rights, which essentially means they can't function inside the EU.
Well, this is very interesting, because that's sort of what the ACLU sued against Tenet and some American contractors on behalf of Khalid al-Masri is trying to prove, is that without this idea of universal human rights, without that and without the idea of honoring law, certainly within this country, that is what the world and civilized world and the civilized countries should be built on, is this rule of law. And I think what you're saying in terms of European countries dealing with terrorism for as long as they have on the in the isolated events that they have there, which are more than the United States, mm-hmm. they deal with it on a local enforcement level, local law enforcement, and sort of a somewhat something.
Catch the criminal. That's right. What they're trying to do.
And with when you have 9/11 commissioners talking to us now here in this country saying that is an inevitable, that America has not seen that yet, a sort of consistent onslaught of small terrorist incidents that a lot of European countries have dealt with over
Absolutely.
The years. And it's very interesting because of the extremeness, how extreme Condoleezza Rice is being in the neocon death cult is in laying down this law, it really baffles me that how stubborn and what a lack of contrition they have in terms of, it seems to everybody, every rational thinking person, that this will only escalate a jihadist ideology.
Not only that, we have had already one American Secretary of State whose credibility was stripped bare before the world. His name is Colin Powell. We now risk in Condoleezza Rice having a second American Secretary of State with her credibility in tatters after these series of events.
Well, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Do you know what a Sermamercial is? Do you know what that is? Well, Disney knows, and so does Satan. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as News Daddy. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, News Daddy.
Well, look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Celebrate the one-year anniversary of Air America Radio. We're pleased to present another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
So I guess we've all heard about what's going on in Salem. I mean, the Christo-fascist zombie brigades are at it again. Hysterical children in the village are accusing various people of being witches just because they can, Riley. It's like they point to someone, say they're a witch, and it becomes true.
You notice how the Puritans have turned witch into a bad word?
No kidding, dude. And you know what else I hear? You have to sign a loyalty oath before you can even get into Watcha trials. I mean, it's terrible what they're doing, but how can you not watch it? You know what I mean? It's like a buggy wreck. You can't turn away. We actually spoke to one of the girls just before she was put to the stake, and here's what she had to say.
The man interviewing me is a witch!
And that's when we lost Brendan McDonald, the elder.
What a shame. He will be missed. What are they going to do next? Put these women on boats and take them to other countries so they could torture them?
I think you can do that here now. But they are imprisoning people without a trial. They are shredding the Magna Carta, Riley. What is this? Some kind of witch hunt? Hey, that's a good name for it, witch hunt. I should probably trademark that, huh?
And it's really appropriate, too, because they're hunting witches.
They're burning teenagers, and some of them are really hot, pardon the pun.
You know, Mark, I feel for these witches, but I do want to mention that currently, black people are being bought and sold as slaves.
It's still legal, Mark. If you don't like it, change the law.
But I don't have a vote.
We're taking some calls now.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
53 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
The new svelter Mark Riley. I just noticed that Mark has lost a little weight. He's watching his weight. Good for you, man.
I'm watching. By the way, we got a Saddam update. We got to keep this going
now. What do you got?
He's still refusing to go into court. He's still meeting with his lawyers.
I am the president.
He is the president. He is saying there's a delay because one of the defendants is refusing to come to court. The defendant is now meeting with his attorneys. If he doesn't come, they will make other arrangements.
And they're going to tie him to the chair, dude. They're going to tie him to the chair.
No, I think they may just do it without him.
Really?
Yeah, I think they may just try and, try him in absentia. Why not? They do it all.
Let's take a bet, though. He can't stay away from the cameras. He's on a roll, right?
I don't know. Maybe they'll get the camera. Maybe they'll grant him an interview in his cell.
A private interview.
Yeah, exactly.
With Anderson Cooper. We'll fly
there
down
there.
There you go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Excellent. Perfect. Great. From the Associated Press, delays money laundering charges upheld. Delays money laundering charges upheld. Translation, delays dirty laundry to be aired. All right. From Associated Press, Cheney to greet troops coming home from Iraq. Cheney to greet troops coming home from Iraq. Translation, new policy to encourage troops to remain in Iraq.
I knew that was going to be.
From Reuters, German calendar depicts erotic moments from the Bible. German calendar depicts erotic moments from the Bible. Translation, radical new interpretation of phrase, Sermon on the Mount. How about this one? New Bible calendar concentrates on the begatting. Hey, how about this one? Calendar divides Bible into Old and New Testicles. How is that not going to be funny? In what world can... Is old testicles not going to be funny? I don't care if you're a man or a woman, young or old. Old testicles. That's got to be funny. I mean, everyone has a grandpa. All right. Oh, boy. Fascinating. I don't even want to go into that story. Jen is in the hospital. She's still in the hospital.
Oh.
How does she sound, John? Does she sound withered or...
She sounds upbeat today.
She sounds upbeat today?
Yeah.
Let's say good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Jenna. How are you feeling? How are your knees?
They're getting better. They're getting better.
Yeah.
I'm actually in a nursing home now.
Oh, that's right. You're in a nursing home. But it's a facility because you're recovering. Is it a nursing home? Is it filled with retired people or?
No, it's a rehab unit.
Okay. That sounds a little better. I think rehab.
It's all people who are working on getting better.
Do you still get the pills? Do they still provide you with the fun in the morning?
Yeah, I get whatever I want.
All right, so what, are you listening on the phone in the lobby or in your bed or in the radio?
No, I came into the, I guess it's like a cafe or something.
Oh, yeah? It's hard to tell?
Well, I might be the dining room.
How long you been there?
since day before yesterday.
All right. Well, so we'll check in with you later. Have you taken any OxyContin today?
I had two oxycodone and two Vistral.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, enjoy your morning.
So, but did Brandon tell you about my need to confess?
Oh, you have a confession?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it a little later. Hang on, because we don't have that much time right now. We'll get back on you in a little while, and we'll do a confession for you.
Well, yeah, this is really weighing on me.
Uh-oh.
All right, Jenna, we'll talk to you in a second. Jenna is recovering from knee surgery, and she can only listen to us on the phone, so she calls the studio and gets put on hold. I'll tell you what a CERM commercial is in just a few minutes. We'll also talk a little bit about the economy, a little more about Saddam. More stuff coming up, 57 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, and what is our eighth to the last show? Good morning, geniuses, philosophy kings and queens. Philosophy kings and queens. How about philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, lurking conservatives? I got one lurking conservative out there that's constantly text messaging sedition at airamericaradio.com. Constantly text messaging about this or that, abortion. Today it was about the joke I made about putting Saddam back in power. This person was like, Michael Savage already thought of that. Michael Savage already thought of that. Yeah, I don't listen to Michael Savage, and I'm sure he was serious on some level.
Yeah, right?
I think I was half serious. But look, Saddam Hussein is stealing the show in the courtroom in Baghdad. Yesterday he shouted, "I will not come to an unjust court. Go to hell." And today he didn't show up. He's not showing up. They're saying it's just a matter of procedure, but he's not coming out of his room until something changes. Who knows what? What do you think? Are they going to pull him out tied to a chair, Riley?
It doesn't matter. I'm going to tell you why it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because he is, again, the agenda. In other words, the court could have said, all right, we're just going to continue the trial without him. Or the court could have said, we're going to send 20 guys into his cell, strap him down, and bring him into the court. They did neither. Why?
Because they don't care. They don't want to make a spectacle. They want to honor some sort of procedural courtroom-like behavior. They want
because they are comfortable, for whatever reasons, with allowing Saddam to shape the agenda of this trial.
Because he's flailing. They want people to see him as a broken person
as opposed
to a dictator.
No, he doesn't look like a broken person.
Yeah, a little bit.
Nah.
A little bit.
Nah. He's saying, look, I am not a part of this. I am the president of Iraq. You can try me if you want to, but I'm still the president. If you put a bullet in my head, I'm still the president of Iraq.
But you know what, though? You know, in terms of, like, some of the comments that I've read, in terms of some Iraqis, you know, being sympathetic to him, the one that I thought really put it the best was, some Iraqi said, quote, "This is called the trial of the century, but I think it is the comedy of the century, and Saddam is its hero," end quote. A clown hero, a comic hero. It's very interesting, because what this is doing, despite the fact that he is being belligerent and outspoken, defiant, megalomaniacal, and tyrant-like, is that this entire process, for me, and I think one of the reasons what we talked about before, why he becomes somewhat sympathetic, despite the fact that he is a genocidal lunatic, a killer, and a dictator, is that this has humanized him, Riley. I think that even though, to me, I mean, you don't have to agree with me, even though he's being defiant, you're not looking at a guy with a gun, wearing regalia, living, you know, building statues, standing on the terrace of a palace. You're looking at a guy who's being forced to wear the same suit every day, has no ties, has a beard, is been humanized. Like, I see his pathology very clearly. I see his narcissism very clearly. I see his failing very clearly. His failing, even though he's assuming, he's saying, I'm still the king of Iraq or the president of Iraq. Even though he's saying that, is defiant and as impressive as it is given the situation, it's sad and it's human to me.
It's sad and it's human, but Mark, remember this. He is saying, I'm not coming to court. And without him, there is no court. That may be a weakness in the court system in Iraq, but the fact of the matter is, it shows that he is still controlling the agenda, and that's all he wants.
But the other issue is that if this is an example of democracy, you have to assume that to some Iraqis, they're like, well, this doesn't work. Why don't they just kill that bastard? Why don't they just kill that bastard?
And you find that same sentiment on the streets of New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, trial. We know he did it. Kill him. Yeah.
It's just interesting to me that in order for anyone to have the feelings that we've been talking about, the feelings that, you know, that this is a sympathetic character all of a sudden, even though he really isn't, it's because this thing is humanizing. Even if he is dictating the agenda, which he is, people are looking at this guy as a guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's no longer this ogre. He's no longer this dictator that invaded Kuwait and killed the Kurds and did all these different things. He is a man on trial for his life, much as anybody else would be on trial for their lives.
Speaking about dictators, in a speech to Havana University students, Fidel Castro called Jeb Bush the fat little brother. And then went on to qualify it. He was talking about his suspicion that Jeb helped an anti-Cuba terrorist get into the U.S. He referred to Jeb as the fat little brother in Florida, and he got a big laugh, apparently. What's with all these dictators becoming comedians? Then he said, quote, "Forgive me for using the term fat little brother. It's not a criticism, rather a suggestion that he do some more exercise and go on a diet. Don't you think? I'm just doing this for the gentleman's health." This is Castro saying this.
Yeah.
What all these guys are getting human in their old age?
Guys are getting covered in their old age. Castro has done speeches denouncing America for the last 40-some-odd years. It is amazing to me that they choose a reference to Jeb Bush's weight as something that everybody covers also.
Well, that's because, again, maybe then the press needs to be taken to task for humanizing some of these very evil men who have been have been tyrants in their countries. I mean, because they choose this. You know why? Look at that thing. It's because it's funny. That's why they choose that. And I'm sure.
Give them a spot on the Daily Show. Let's take this to the stage.
Exactly. The entire language of culture is becoming comedy. It's the only way that people process things, or the way that the media has decided that they should process things. That's a very interesting point, Riley. This guy makes speeches all the time against America, yet when he says, hey, the president's brother's a little chubby,
a little fat, ain't he?
And of course, Bush, Jeb Bush.
Send Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. Have Castro on Jon Stewart. Jeb didn't dignify the comment, though he has made jokes about it. About his own weight in relation to the comment. So let's get into this thing about Satan. Can we? Look, here's what's going on. Ever since Mel Gibson's Passion made $600 million on the back of Jesus from people who really weren't regular movie audience goers, that weren't regular movie people, the industry has been trying to get religion, or at least get it out there in their product. All right, so enter The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Narnia. Satan is at work trying to bring Christians of all kinds, including the extreme Christian right of the Christian Fascist Zombie Brigade, together with secular folks, with the sole purpose of making tons of money. All right, in this scenario, Satan is being played by Disney. Now, in promoting the Chronicles of Narnia, it's a film based on it's a Christian allegorical fantasy novel series that C.S. Lewis wrote years ago. Disney is aligning itself with Christian organizations to promote the film, but not just in outreach. They are actually having a contest for people of the cloth, okay, to place characters of the Narnia film in their sermons. The winner gets $1,000 in cash, a trip to London, and then later a trip to hell.
You know, this sounds exactly like the kinds of tie-ins, marketing tie-ins they do with companies like Burger King and McDonald's and fast food. How does it feel to be Burger King, you evangelical Christians? Because that's what Disney's doing. Disney is playing these people. They are playing them, pure and simple.
It's exactly what the Republicans do.
Yes.
This pseudo grassroots reach out, this promotional campaign to align smaller organizations, PR organizations, to go out there into the churches, to put out Narnia material, to encourage people to put on Narnia pageants. This is a big marketing push, because $600 million, that's not nothing in the movie business. Do you know what I'm saying?
It is not nothing, not for nothing. And remember that this is the same Disney company that many of these same evangelical Christians, dare I say it, tried to crucify over being too gay-friendly. You remember that? That was just a couple, 3-4 years ago. Remember this, evangelicals, because I know some of you evil people are listening. I shouldn't say evil. I shouldn't say all evangelicals are evil. But evangelicals, listen up. Pay close attention. You are a market to Disney. They don't believe anything you believe, but they will take your money if you give them the opportunity.
But there is some scary movement being made by the Christian right into Hollywood. This is interesting stuff, because there is a well-orchestrated push by Christian groups to take over Hollywood from the inside and start making thinly veiled religious films in the guise of spiritual morality stories about human struggles. There's a former nun named Barbara Nicolosi who is head of Act One. This is a Christian screenwriting program in Los Angeles. She's part of the Christian Rights' continued attempt to mold this culture into a Christian one as opposed to a free one. And she is definitely in the heart of the beast here. The great secular Jewish power paradigm of Hollywood was busted open by religious fanatic Mel Gibson with the Passion, as I said before. Now, the thing is that Nicolosi's organization is designed to teach Christians within the film community to create scripts that sublimate the Christian message for mass appeal, as opposed to hit people over the head with it and marginalizing the fanatic core of the Christian right. This is to make a make the secular nature of this country into something that they are more comfortable with. And this is interesting, given that we talked to Christopher Hedges yesterday, that fascism and massive social change is based on the illusion of community. And this emerging use of film as Christian propaganda might be dangerous in light of, essentially, the way that people take in media now, to creating that community, to creating that propaganda, to sort of buttressing these mega churches that are all about, submission of an entire community in the name of Christ.
Well, you know what? And maybe it's me, Mark. I'm not Jewish, okay?
Yeah.
But I can't explain why. I smell anti-Semitism here. Yeah. I really do. I smell a very indirect, backdoor kind of anti-Semitism that starts with, well, we have to Christianize this.
Yeah.
Because it's in the control of somebody else. And who is it that they say it's in control of?
Right. Well, Mel Gibson's making a Holocaust movie, and his father is an on-the-record revisionist.
Yeah.
It all stinks to me that, what scares me even more, something we're going to talk about later, is that most secular people, a lot of people are just fragmenting into very personalized entertainment habits, whether it's on the iPod or whether it's selecting movies of their like.
I'll admit it, I've done it.
But there was once a community around television that was based on at least an attempt at presenting news and presenting some sort of objective representation of the country and the world we live in. Now everything's fragmented, and when one group is so intent on amassing communities and a movement towards something like this, the Christianization of the country, you know, with everybody sort of going, hey, come on, man, just party. There's people working diligently, and it frightens me.
Well, yeah, and you got to do it. You got it working in Ohio, which we talked about with Chris yesterday, and we got it working in Hollywood. It's both ends of the same thing.
Exactly. A little scary, man. So I guess we're going to come back. We got my friend Jack Bulware is going to be here to talk about trying to get a swordfish beak onto an airline. That's in a little while. We got the Cliff Notes coming up. 70 back.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
We're at the Republican National Convention. Dan Pashman went underground, undercover, to pull a report.
Dan Pashman was directly underneath Laura Bush minutes after she finished speaking.
Infiltrating security breach man.
This is Dan Pashman for Air America. I am underneath Madison Square Garden, underneath the stage here with our friend the stagehand. So, hypothetically, if somebody wanted to cut out George W. Bush's teleprompter right as he begins his speech, is this where you'd want to be to do that?
I'm not even sure where that would be. This is mostly audio.
So to cut out his mic, this is where I'd want to be?
Yeah, you could do that.
I could cut out his mic from down here?
And the podium's come out of the deck also.
So we're directly beneath the podium?
Yeah, that's the podium right here.
That is the podium. The main podium is right there. We are directly underneath it at this time. And now you said all these signs back here, all those signs that look like they're hand-painted, actually have been trucked in and printed?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of 4 more year signs. I think if you add up all these years, this is like 1 billion years.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Oofa.
You know there's no media in this part of the floor? Do you guys know that?
I did not.
Mm-mm. No media on the fifth floor. Like, okay. In the OP.
Okay.
No go.
Okay, we'll head out then.
All right,
I just got kicked out of the Republican National Convention. Ow!
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, we're back. 23 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Riley,
hey.
Did you get some news in on Saddam there? Is that
yes.
What I see?
Yes, we were speculating just a few minutes ago about what would happen. Would the trial go forward without Saddam? And that is exactly what's happening, according to CNN. The trial has judge in the case has decided to move forward without Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein has refused to come back to the trial, saying that the trial is unjust.
And not coincidentally, they've stopped covering it.
They've stopped
CNN.
Covering it on CNN.
No more live coverage. The clown is gone.
That's right.
The evil clown has left the building.
I own this.
Yeah. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. At his trial yesterday, Saddam Hussein said he would refuse to return to what he called an unjust court when it reconvened today. But the joke's on him. Today's a holiday. Everybody knows all Iraq government buildings are closed on National Kill Occurred Day. Saddam said, this is terrorism because he has no fresh clothes and has been deprived of a shower and exercise. This has led those of us to the sad realization in Morning's Edition that our technical producer, Chris Lopresto, is a victim of terrorism.
Oh,
there's no shower and exercise. You get it, Chris? Because you know.
Yeah, I get it.
You're dirty and fat. Saddam has become...
What an a-hole.
Saddam has become increasingly morose and agitated in custody, which has only gotten worse since he found out that Johnny Cochran had died.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, Chris. I love you. Yeah, I do it because I love, really, and because it makes me feel better. In a speech in Havana, Fidel Castro referred to Florida Governor Jeb Bush as the fat little brother in Florida. He added, George Bush's brother is so fat. The crowd yelled, how fat is he? Castro replied, I told you he was fat. That's enough. Why do you question me? He's fat because Castro says so. Leave it at that. Promoting its new Chronicles of Narnia film to Christian audiences, Disney is sponsoring a contest for the best sermon, which incorporates a Narnia theme. Grand prize is a trip to London and $1,000 in cash. One Catholic priest gave a sermon about a young boy who walked through the priest's wardrobe into a magical world of taking baths together, giving each other massages, and performing special naked magic rituals. You knew something was coming.
God.
But the magic ritual was sort of the icing on the cake. It's 26 past the hour. My buddy Jack Bulwer is going to be on the phone with us in a while. Jack is a freelance writer out there in San Francisco. He's done a couple of interesting stories for Wired Magazine. One is pertinent to the news in that the Transportation Security Administration has lifted the ban on sharp objects. I don't know if Jack knew about that when he was returning from Chile with a swordfish beak in his luggage, but there is a journey there that he's going to hip us to. And not only that, he was in Chile, down off the coast of Chile, doing research on a guy who treasure hunts with a robot.
Ooh.
This is deep stuff. This is the real deal. He's also done a piece on some monks who are honoring a long tradition of monks in the printing business by selling printer cartridges. It's a monastery that sells printer cartridges. So we'll talk to Jack about that later in the show. We've got Bob Sullivan, MSNBC's tech consumer affairs correspondent, to talk to us about how your cell phone list, the list of the calls on your cell phone, is available to anybody. Anybody can buy
what
the names and numbers of everybody you called on your cell phone. Among other things, we're going to talk to him about.
Whoa.
Jack Bulwer up next, 27 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
She grew up in Indiana town, had a good-looking mom. Never was around, but she grew up tall and she grew up.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Today's game is called Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman or Alf's Dad. Now, you may not have seen the sitcom Alf, but Max Wright, the actor who played Alf's dad, looks and sounds uncannily like Joe Lieberman, just like Lieberman looks and sounds uncannily like a Republican. Now, we're going to play four sound bites. Each bite is either Joe Lieberman or Alf's dad. Clip number one.
For exposing gaps in national security and for his concern about world peace, which is something that I'm in favor of myself.
Okay, Joseph Lieberman, Alf's dad. Clip two.
Well, what it boils down to is we've got to take a closer look at our bills.
Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad? Clip three.
Things are appreciated more when they're earned, not when they're just handed to us.
Okay. Joseph Lieberman or Alf's dad? Clip four.
This is something that we're trying to do. We're trying to do this together. This takes a lot of cooperation.
All right. Now, we're going to go to the phones and see what you got. Here we go. John, listening in Wisconsin, to the mic. What's up, John? What do you got?
They all sound the same except clip number three, I believe. I know that is Alf's dad, for sure.
Okay, so you're saying the rest are Lieberman.
I do believe, yes.
Okay, well, you know what? I got to be honest with you. DeMarcos and Yonkers, what do you got?
Lieberman, Alf's dad, Lieberman.
Ooh. Todd. What's up, Todd? What do you got?
I got Alf's dad, Lieberman, Alf's dad, Alf's dad.
Close. Jane, give it a shot.
Alf's dad, Joe Lieberman, Alf's dad,
Joe Lieberman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Darlene in New York City. Good morning, Darlene.
Hey, Darlene.
What do you got?
Hi, Mark and Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm good. Do I
just put that anywhere. What's going on? You got a guess?
I do. Alf's dad, Joe Lieberman, Alf's dad, and Alf's dad.
Ooh. Oh, sorry, Darlene. Omar, what's up, buddy?
I got the answers because I'm going to see you tonight, Mark.
Okay.
I got Alster number one, Lieberman number two, Austin number three, Lieberman number four.
Oh, sorry, buddy. Sorry, man. It was close.
Yeah, man.
Barry in Missouri.
Joe, all the way.
Oh,
sweet.
Oh, close. Close, but wrong. All right, here we go. Streaming in Tampa, we got Gary. What do you got, Gary?
Well, that second one sure sounds like Lieberman, but they're all Elf's dad.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's right. All Elf's dad.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, 37 past. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey.
It is Air America's Morning Sedition. We are playing the greatest hits throughout the next 8 days of our existence here. I will be departing for the great paradise of Los Angeles, though I do love New York. Mark Reilly will be hosting his own show. We've had a great time working together.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to hearing Mark's show, and Rachel will be following him from 7 to 9. I guess we'll find out by the end of next week whether I will be syndicating out of Los Angeles, and I will make that announcement appropriately. Look, since the last time he was on the show, our next guest has been tasting truffles in the Pacific Northwest, interviewing Catholic laser print cartridge selling monks in Wisconsin, spending time with a man from Chicago intent on finding treasure on Robinson Crusoe Island, and finagling a 3-foot swordfish beak all the way from Chile to San Francisco. Travel writer Jack Boulware is now in Hawaii, and he joins us on the phone this morning. Jack!
Good morning.
Hey, Jack.
How you doing, man?
All right.
It's late there, huh?
Yeah, well, we're still in the middle of the luau, so...
Okay. So, now you got to tell the story again, dude. That was the funniest story I ever heard about. So you're in Chile, and you're about to leave after covering something, and you're on the dock talking to fishermen, and they give you a swordfish beak?
Yeah, you know, they speak only Spanish. I speak only English, but somehow we figured it out that... they were fishermen, and the swordfish is what they're after. And one of them runs to the cabin and comes back out and gives me this blood-stained beak of a swordfish.
How long was it?
3 feet long.
Oh, my God. And this is a gift.
Yeah. Well, he handed it to me, and I banged it on the deck, and I thought, God, this is pretty sharp.
Uh-huh.
Pretty hard.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay, thanks. And I handed it back. He goes, no, it's for you. So, you know, you have to, it's this honor thing, right? You have to
take
it. So,
yeah.
So I took it back to my hosteria and had the little guy who worked there wrap it up in a garbage sack with some, you know, a couple of pieces of tape.
Oh, man.
I thought, well, I'll take it back and, you know, we'll see. I don't know. What else am I going to do with it?
Yeah.
So I take it back on this little dinky plane that they take a 3-hour plane trip back to the mainland to Santiago. And that's no problem because people are bringing on boxes of lobsters and, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah. Bodies. Yeah.
So I get to the Santiago airport and the customs guys go, you're never going to get that back.
Swordfish beak.
Swordfish. And we thought, well, will it fit in my suitcase? No, it's way too long. So I just stuck it in the back of my backpack with this thing sticking out, you know.
Yeah.
And at least a foot out of the backpack, the sharp blade. I went, well, let's see what happens. So it's Chile, so that's no problem. I can get on the plane. And I fly all the way back to Atlanta, and I get off, and immediately I look suspicious. These three dudes pull me aside, and they're big, like, football player kind of size guys.
Yeah.
And they start talking to me, and they ask where I was.
Yeah.
What is this thing? What is this object? We pull it out of the backpack. And I'm trying to be cool because I have 3 Cuban cigars in my shirt.
Oh, you didn't, Jack. You didn't. What kind?
That express moment, you know, except I don't do drugs anymore. I just have swordfish beaks and cigars.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of them has to go and make a phone call, and apparently he was calling the Fish and Wildlife Department of America to see if this fish...
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, you know, they lifted the ban on sharp objects, like, right around the time that you did this. It's just amazing to me. So they found out what it wasn't endangered or it was?
No, they found out it was okay. I'm kind of sweating a little, and they're like, yeah, go ahead, go through, which is astonishing.
Yeah, but you know,
happen.
With a 3-foot, you know, natural sword of swordfish flesh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, they take, you know, pocket knives and stuff. But this thing, you could take down a plane with it. It's pretty sharp.
You know?
Pretty big.
So what happens?
So that was okay. So then I go through the x-ray machine, and, of course, that's not good at all. They pull me aside again.
Yeah.
And these three ladies this time, and they're pretty hefty, you know.
Yeah.
And they like, what is this? And, well, we're going to have to unwrap it. So they take it out of my backpack, and they start unraveling the plastic, and it's stinks, like, it's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, because the fish is, like, I don't know, it wasn't even 24 hours, you know,
yeah,
in the water.
Yeah.
And the people behind me are like, ooh, man, what is that? And one of the ladies, the security ladies, actually wrinkles her nose and starts walking away. And the other one goes, oh, that's all right. She's just pregnant. Like, oh, man, this is really weird. So they cut with scissors and unwrap the whole thing and look at it again. And they're,
yeah,
like, well, I guess that's okay. And they wrap it up again, and I make them wrap it.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, please, come on. This is inconveniencing me.
So you get it on the plane.
So I put it on the plane, and now I can really smell it strong in the overhead compartment.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know? And so, yeah, then I get it all the way back to San Francisco, and I can't believe it. I'm sitting in my house, and I've got this blood-stained beak, and the end of it's pretty fleshy, you know?
Yeah.
And I realized, well, the guys in Chile, my friends told me, well, you know, all you need to do is hang it up, you know, from the blade, and it takes about a year to dry out.
Oh, but you were victorious, man. You got it all the way.
That's the system.
And that's not even the story you went to cover down there in Chile. The story that's going to be in Maxim is about this treasure hunt guy. But I'd like people to read that. But I want you to tell me. I'm kind of intrigued about these monks. The monks in Wisconsin.
Monks.
The laser monks.
The laser monks. Yeah, it's this group of eight monks who live in an abbey in the middle of nowhere in rural Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And for the last 3 or 4 years, they've been selling, like, inkjet cartridges online.
Yeah.
And they invented their name, you know, lasermonks.com. And so it all started because this guy was, they're trying to think of a way to raise money, and he's sitting at a computer, and he realizes he has to buy an inkjet cartridge for his printer.
Yeah.
And he just realizes, you know, this is ridiculous, because we've all been there.
Yeah.
Who hasn't been
exactly
there?
Exactly. It's ridiculous. That's where they make all their money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, they give away printers when you buy a computer. I mean, it doesn't even matter. So he started a company, and, you know, they don't have time to run anymore because, you know, they've got, like, 8 hours of prayer and chanting and singing and, you know, shoveling snow. So they hired a couple of ladies to come in and, they sell toner cartridges.
What's the website?
Lasermonks.com.
It's very interesting because, like, in the article I was reading it, and I still have that impression of monks just wandering around these abbeys with robes on, praying, not talking to each other, and if they're in business, they're either making Jägermeister or beer. So this was sort of interesting. And the other observation, I guess, the main monk guy said that they've been in the printing business for 900 years or something.
Yeah, he said we're just doing it a little differently now
because they were in charge of the manuscripts.
Yeah, I know. I mean, instead of, like, you know, manually copying everything in calligraphy, now they're allowing people to, you know, make a steaming hot laser print of, you know, whatever's
porn
on the computer.
Riley wants to know what kind of cigars you brought up.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they're gone now. Sorry.
I know, but what would you get? Monte Cristo? Let me guess. Monte Cristo number two.
I think they were Partagas. I'm not sure.
Oh, Partagas. Okay.
I only... you know, the best way to do it is through your shirt pocket, right? Because they'll search all your luggage and everything.
It's good that you're bringing this up on national radio.
Radio, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, my name is
Jim Mark Maron.
Jim Bolster.
That's it.
Jack's a real smoker. He's a guy that, like, he'll smoke almost anything if it's a cigar.
Really?
Yeah, there's not a lot of joy in it anymore, is there, Jack?
Oh, I have my limits.
you want to give us a quick rundown on the Chile thing, the Treasure Island thing, Robinson Crusoe Island? Where is that?
Sure. Robinson Crusoe Island is 400 miles off the coast of Chile. It's until the 1960s, it had a Spanish name, but they renamed it Robinson Crusoe Island because there was a sailor, a Scottish sailor, who was actually marooned there for 4 years, and he was the basis for the novel Robinson Crusoe. However, that the novel is set in the Caribbean, and he had a Man Friday. There's all these other differences, but nevertheless, Chile went, hey, let's drum up some tourism, so they renamed the island Robinson Crusoe Island. There's all this Robinson Crusoe crap everywhere, even though it has nothing to do with the island. But anyway, there's a guy from Chicago. Chicago there who did some research, found there was $10 billion of buried treasure there. You know, mostly gold, of course, chests of gold, has to be chests of gold.
Sure.
And some jewels and stuff. And,
yeah.
Sold his company in Chicago and moved there and has been looking for it for 6 years.
Unbelievable. And did he find it? Did he find anything?
He found, you know, little bits and pieces of sailors' uniforms and some glassware and stuff like that. But
not the big take?
Not yet.
And then in the story that's going to appear in Maxim in March, you talk about this robot that's being used and that someone else might have found some treasure, right?
Yeah, he'd been digging there for 6 years, and suddenly this company from Chile brings a four-wheeled robot with a little blinking light on top.
Yeah.
Finds the treasure in 2 days.
Oh,
all of Chile, all of South America goes ballistic. This is all over the tabloids. They're calling, you know, this guy, this Chicago guy named Bernard Kaiser.
Yeah.
There's big headlines that say, Bernard Kaiser, the great loser.
Oh, my God.
Screaming headlines. And then in 2 weeks, it was all over. The robot was discredited, and he's now back to his first love, which is hiring laborers to dig in the dirt with hand trowels.
Old school. All right, so Jack, you're just hanging out in Hawaii? That's cool.
Trying to.
All right, well, I'll give you a call later in the week. I'm going back out west in about a week and a half. We'll hang out.
Splendid.
Okay, Jack.
Take care, Jack.
Thank you, guys.
That was Jack Boulware. His piece is going to be in Maxim in March. Good storytellers, good stuff. We're going to come back with a very famous and exciting moment, Morning's Edition history, featuring Pendejo the Revolutionary. 47 past, Air America Radio's Morning's Edition.
This is Cindy Sheehan. Whether I'm waking up in Crawford, Texas, Washington, D.C., or Vacaville, California, I wake up with Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
The yelling guy, the guy from Poodle, or is it Balls? I forget.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
He's on 9-1.
Okay, all right, put him through. Hey, man, what's going on? So how's that thing you're working on going?
You mean the revolution?
Yeah, how's the revolution going? Did you guys come up with a better name yet?
I'll admit we have made some unfortunate mistakes in the naming of our group in the past. We are no longer known as Nambla, Poodle, Gals, or Balls. We are now called the Tactical Elite and Battle Action Group.
Okay, so you're going with Teabag.
Teabag, Mark. We will go out across the land, find the evil, slanderous conservatives where they live, and teabag them into submission. They will feel one thing above all others. A stern and ferocious teabagging.
All right. Well, I think this is something you're going to have to find out on your own, buddy. But make sure you send me one of those T-shirts before you burn them, okay? So last week your group had a big, scary, revolutionary brunch. How'd that go?
The turnout at our rally...
Brunch.
Rally was disappointing, to say the least.
Well, I'm sorry.
It was me, my Shih Tzu stompers, who cannot be left alone, my girlfriend, who, while not actually there, as she had a shift at Crabtree and Evelyn, but assured me she would join the rally on conference call, and the Johnsons had to leave early, as their toddler Ben is an albino.
Hmm.
Naturally, the outdoor table irritated his corneas. But the Revolutionary Council took a vote.
You mean you and Stompers?
Yes, me and Stompers.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided that what Teabag needs more than anything is a recruiting drive.
Ah, recruiting drive. Since it's just you and Stompers, you decided, hey, maybe some people would help kick this revolution into high gear, huh?
Exactly.
All right, buddy. So where'd you start the recruiting drive?
My apartment complex. Mm-hmm. Chantilly by the lake. Stompers and I took the elevator to the top floor and vowed to teabag our way to the very bottom.
So, how many floors is that, man?
Four.
Oh. And how many apartments would you say are in the complex?
As many as 16, I think.
So, how many recruits did your liberal action group make?
Well, I think the hour I chose may not have been the best. I found that at 11:30 a.m., most of my potential recruits were at work.
Oh, so you mean all of them were at work?
No, Mark, it might surprise you to learn I had a very successful recruiting day. Heed the names of my new lieutenants that shall haunt the dreams of the right wing. Rosa, the cleaning lady, and Ethan, a seventh grader who was homesick that day but would not open the door all the way. But even through that narrow slot, I managed to teabag him.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself, man. Well, while the police are on their way over to you, why don't you tell me a little bit about that badass revolutionary Rosa?
Rosa?
Yeah.
She spoke no English, but I could see in her the burning spirit of Che. So Stompers and I, and Rosa, and Ethan, as soon as he asks his parents, will begin our assault on the neocons. To war, Mark! To war!
Okay, so it's you and Rosa, a 12-year-old boy and a little dog. Buddy, that's not a revolution. That's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, the story of Teabag will not be a story for children, I can assure you.
You can say that again. I can't take it anymore. I can't let you do this any longer. All right, listen, buddy. Are you in front of a computer right now?
Yes.
Okay. Type in the word teabag, all right, into the Google image search bar. All right, go ahead. I'll wait.
Okay. T-E-A-B-A-G. There. Let's... Oh, good sweet Lord! What
have I done? Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. So there you have it. That was a guy from the revolutionary group, formerly known as Teabag.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Oh, I miss Tom Johnson. Tom Johnson was the guy that wrote the Revolutionary series. He was the first to go. He's the man behind that. He's now working on comedian Greg Giraldo's new Comedy Central show, and I'm actually going to be stopping by tonight's TV taping of Friday nights with Greg Giraldo to hang out and say hello to old Pendejo Tom. Comedy Central has given us some pairs of tickets to give away. The taping is tonight at 6 on East 44th Street in Manhattan. Give us a call at 866-303-2270, and we'll give a pair of tickets away to the first 5 callers.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
This is the 8th to the last show. The last show will be broadcast out of Air America Radio's home ship, home headquarters, whatever the hell you want to call this, in New York next Friday. In just a moment, we're going to have a special Wednesday Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington in just a second. I would like to reach out and say that one of my cats has made it to the paradise of Los Angeles with my wife on the plane. I got two that I'm trying to get out air cargo, which is not a great way to ship cats, but every day it's too cold to get them on the plane. I am trying to find a good home for one cat now. One cat. Come on, people. And it's not crazy anymore. The cat's not crazy. And this isn't sad. This is a real thing. If I have to, I will fly my wife back out here, and we will take both of these cats on the plane. But this is a good cat. Can make some people very happy. Any lonely people out there that need a cat? All right, moving into Saddam Hussein.
Another lonely person.
Maybe Saddam needs a cat. I'm going to send him one of my cats to Iraq, but I can't get it out of JFK because the weather's too cold. Saddam Hussein stealing the show no more. He has refused to come out of his cell to go to participate in what he sees as a fraudulent courtroom process because of the American occupation, and he's not coming out, but they're going to continue without him.
Well, look, he can be tried in absentia. Many people have before. The fact of the matter is this. Does anyone think that Saddam Hussein is going to get off? In other words, does anybody think when this is all said and done, somebody's going to come back, the judge is going to come back and say, no, he's not guilty.
You know that
they didn't do it.
You know they're joking about it in the Oval Office. They're joking about everyone. It's like, look, we can just put him back in power. That would solve all our questions.
Solve all the problems. Yeah, but see, at this point, for the, as far as the court and the Iraqi justice system is concerned, it doesn't matter if he's there or not. The result is, by most people's measure, predetermined. They're going to find him guilty. Now, whether he gets the death penalty or not is another story. He has not, as far as I know, denied the substance of the charges against him, which is he sent a bunch of people into a town and killed a lot of people.
Well, it's interesting that all the testimony they're getting from witnesses is about torture at the hands of Saddam's half-brother, who was on trial with him, his co-defendant in
the
trial. Yes, who headed off Saddam's intelligence agency. And all of these testimonies, whether they're done behind a scrim with a distorted voice out of fear of reprisal, because you have to know that the way that things work in the Middle East, there's still a lot of tribal alliances, there's still a lot of ex-Baathists, there's still a lot of Saddam loyalists that will seek reprisals. I mean, his lawyers are being killed. This goes both ways with the tribal loyalties there and what people are willing to do. So a lot of people are too afraid to testify with their faces showing and their voices being heard. But it was all about torture. They're building a case of murder of 140 people based on the torture of those survivors and people who had people and their families killed. What's interesting to me is that we have Condoleezza Rice running around Europe trying to justify private torture prisons or justify getting information out of detainees by any means necessary as long as it's within the law that the neocon death cult dictates, which means torture. It's very ironic to me that the behavior of this government is not any different in terms of torture than Saddam's was. It's just a little less public and seemingly they want it to be thought that they have a better agenda, but torture is torture, and it will reap the vengeance, spite, and contempt of anybody associated with anybody who was tortured. Needless to say, of liberals and progressives and people that are against torture around the world, it only is going to inflame jihadism if they continue it.
They're going to continue to inflame jihadism, and they're going to continue to lie to America's allies. And that is going to erode things from both sides.
Yep.
And it's going to be a very, very difficult thing. It's going to be difficult for America to get sympathy, for example, to deal with the Iranian situation,
right,
which America, you know, I mean, you know, Condoleezza Rice, Bush, and these people have not ruled out the military invasion of Iran. Then what?
Yeah, but what if the Iranians, what if the new Iraqi government is completely aligned with the Iranian theocracy, which is possible, that the majority of Shia within the parliament of Iraq could be, then what are they going to do? How is that going to unfold? No one knows what the hell is going to happen between Iraq and Iran in terms of whether that the Shiite majority, the religious Shia majority, is aligned with the Iraqi or the Iranian theocracy.
You know, you just gave me a very scary thought there, Mark.
Yeah.
What happens if they elect a Shia government and the Shia government decides to suspend Saddam's trial, just lynch him?
Well, that could happen.
It could happen. It absolutely could happen.
The Bible's book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah. One of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Colon Blow, Texas. Your grace.
Hail Satan, Prince of Darkness, Lord of the Flies, Demon of Hell, Father of Lies, Lord of the Underworld. Whoops. I was reading from my What If God Is Wrong notes. You know, you can never be too careful, you know. That's all I'm saying. Take two. Heed my words, ye envious petters of ducks, swallowers of gnats, and that guy across the street from me who masturbates to the Natural History Museum's tortoise cam. Buy some blackout curtains. You have adorned yourself in the blasphemies of pride, vainglory, lust, and other assorted metaphoric bling for too long now. And now God's cup is brimming over with divine wrath, and your soul, like an overturned garbage can, has become the delight of stinky cats feeding off the wages of your sinful rubbish. By the way, when cleaning up sinful rubbish, there's no better device than the Oric vacuum cleaner. And because every Oric vacuum cleaner locks sinful rubbish in the bag, your whole family will breathe easier knowing there's no more lust in the carpet. Ask yourself this question. What would Jesus use? Oric. Never mind that. Because now you are in for the smoting of your lives. A most disturbing and horrifying event has evented. According to the World Wildlife Federation, or WWF, A new species of carnivorous mammal has been spotted on the island of Borneo. Looking something like a cross between a fox and a cat, this luciferic creature is almost certainly the result of Christ's anger at gay people being allowed to celebrate Christmas. Mark my words, Marks. Christmas approacheth, and God's checking his list for some ass-kicking. For was prophesied in a little-known poem in Revelation 1 Adam 12, 1 Adam 12, we have a bear attacking a fat man. And I quote, "It was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, except Uncle Herbie, whose pathetic life at most is an omelet of darkness on top of bleak toast." Anyway, it seems Uncle Herbie had been up all night celebrating the loss of one more day in his life. He drank past his limit, cramming food down his throat until his kidneys did bleed and his liver did bloat. In his stomach sat a big ball of gluten, while the pores on his face looked like cheese they were a-sputin'. His colon did kink, buckle and shudder, while it oozed a soft substance, much like butter. Oh yeah, Herb's a sleazeball, but wait, there's much more. His son's a pusher, his mother a whore. And all through the night, as his stomach did gurgle, he dreamt of a neighbor's freezer to burgle. Just then, through the hallway, Santa did skulk, dragging behind him his big bag of bulk. He laid down the presents one by one, a pile of sawdust, a whole wheat bun, a bucket of bran, and when he was done, Herbie was dead. A vessel broke or something, and Santa was taken downtown for questioning. Shundaboon ta-ta-ta-ta-ta! End quote. Oh, there you have it, Democrats. While you're busy fighting off armies of mutant fox cats lusting after your chickens and feathered play toys, I'll be sitting at the throne of Jesus, and another guy named Jesus he hired illegally to clean up around the house, and now he's in trouble with immigration. Till then, fornicators, keep on fornicating, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Oh, thank you, Cardinal. We got an email for you, Cardinal.
Wow. You've outdone yourself this week.
Email. Yeah, an email for the Cardinal.
The device of the devil.
I know. Hey, all. In these last few shows, I thought I'd finally ask why my filthy mind has been wondering, what my filthy mind has been wondering for some time. Does the name MILF Cardinal Milfington have anything to do with the pornographic genre of MILF? Just wondering. Can someone ask Jim?
Ooh.
You're asking me out of character now?
No, I'm sorry, Cardinal. Is it? Do you find that a coincidence?
No, absolutely not. I figure that, you know, you get more hits on the web with MILF on there.
Yeah.
And anything that could raise the consciousness of Christians.
Yeah.
And bring more Christians in is fine with me.
Okay, well, thank you.
Because, you know, Christians not only want to be saved, they want MILF.
Thank you for being candid, Cardinal. It's 16 past the hour. We'll be back with Bob Sullivan to talk about how your personal phone log, the bill of your cell phone and who you called, can be bought and sold in the open market. 16 past, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio. And now, another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
I love that all these baby, whiny, complainy, overreaching Republicans, all they could say is, like, you're playing politics. That's just Democrats. It's a political attack. You know, you're using the Terry Schiavo case politically. And all those are absolutely right. I hope that this is an organized Democratic attack on Republicans because it's time. All you Republicans do is politicize everything. And any time that you're confronted with any reality, you go, but Clinton, you know, that is the big response on the street today. If you talk to any moronic Republican who gets his talking points from Hannity or Rush Limbaugh, and you make any logical argument about DeLay, who is a corrupt little man who has got his hands in every cookie jar possible, and it's clear that he is ethically compromised, if you make an intelligent argument about that to a Republican, they'll go, but Clinton, that's all they can do. How many times can Republicans say, but Clinton, before you say, shut up? It's got got nothing to do with Clinton, you moron. I mean, you got to stop that, people. If you want to have a conversation with a Republican, as soon as he goes, but Clinton, just tell him, you know what, the conversation's over, because that's old news and it makes no difference. But shut up.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Our next guest is, I'm back, we're back live, it's 22 past, I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. Hey. It's weird how you can just time travel in radio.
Yeah.
But our next guest is MSNBC's tech and consumer affairs correspondent and the author of Your Evil Twin, Behind the Identity Theft Epidemic. He joins us this morning to talk, among other things, about the sneaky dealings of credit card companies. Bob Sullivan joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Bob, thanks for coming.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's nice to see you in person. You know, you got me crazy with the identity theft. I remember the time I talked to you about that. I've got myself a crosshatch shredder. I'm literally, you know what else I'm doing? Anytime I sign onto the internet now, I've got all my numbers and passwords on a separate piece of paper, and I cut and paste.
You're cut and pasting? Very good. Very good. That's probably more trouble than it's worth, but at least you're thinking about it. That's good.
But I feel better about it.
If you feel better, that's good.
But literally, now I feel like anytime I'm on a computer punching buttons, there's somebody in the room going, oh, okay, now we see where we're at.
Well, there very well might be, actually.
Oh, thanks loads.
Yeah, sorry about that, but you know, the number of people who have spyware and adware on their computers is, you know, probably in the order of 2 out of every 5 internet users. So,
oh, I have both.
Yeah, and I
scanned with both yesterday. And I'm not going to any more porn sites because
they attach everything.
That'll
anyway.
Take you a long way towards being safer.
No kidding. My computer got some sort of version of computer AIDS from a porn site. Literally, the hard drive died. I had to replace my hard drive,
right?
I think, from some sort of porn site I went to. Now, I'm not proud of it, and I don't do it a lot, but stay away from
that. Let that be a lesson to you.
Yes, be careful of those. Okay, let's get back to what we wanted to talk about today, which is, what is going on now? You work for NBC, so NBC Universal just made a deal with Apple to sell TV shows for the iTunes store. Now, they're going to be able to download, you can download TV content. I know this happened with ABC as well, but I don't understand who's buying this. How big is the screen? Is it, how big? I mean, what are they doing?
Well, the screen can be little. It can be like that little iPod, or you can move it to somewhere else. You can move it. You can watch it on your PC, for example.
Oh, okay. All
sure.
Right.
And in which case, it looks just like a television if your PC is good enough. And, you know, if you like Jay Leno and you can't stay up till 11:30 at night, this is your answer. This is where television is going. No longer do we have this appointment television where you sit down at exactly 6:30 and watch Brian Williams every night. Now you go to MSNBC.com and you can watch them whenever you want.
People do that with our show. They podcast. And I guess this is competing with TiVo as well. They're making it available for a fairly, is it a reasonable amount of money? What is it?
It's $2.
$2 for a download.
$2 a show. Desperate Housewives from ABC, because you probably talked about the ABC deal about a month ago.
Yeah.
iTunes launched into this video area. Now, you know, iTunes, Apple's very smart. They took that crazy cacophonous music downloading world 3 years ago and made sense out of it with iTunes. They're going to do the same thing with video on the internet.
And now there's a little pressure on Apple from our patron saying here, Rob Glazer's company, Real Networks, to, he has sort of taken some tactics to really corner them into making iTunes or iPods open to other formats. Is that true?
It is true. And of course, you know, this is Apple's, it's been their plus and their minus for forever. Apple does make better technology, but they've been closed about it. And that was the decision that turned out to be pretty fateful for them 15 years ago in the PC world. So here with iTunes and with the iPod, will Apple open up its standards to everyone, or will Apple make people play by their rules? That's a big question.
You know, Rob Glazer's the majority owner of this network.
Oh, we got to be nice about him then.
Yeah.
Be nice about Jeff Zucker, too, will you, please?
Yeah, because he's your boss.
He's my boss. Yeah.
All right.
Talk about NBC, that's me.
Okay. Now, Bob, do you think that in the end, Steve Jobs will open iTunes up?
No, of course not.
No?
Steve is a strong personality, and he really loves having control of things. And, you know, sometimes that's good because Steve's smarter than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. That's why he's so rich. On the other hand, I mean, I think, you know, anybody who has looked at the computer industry for years and years will say that's the bane of Apple, is that they have a better idea, but then they hold on to it kind of tightly. And as a result, you know, they've kind of shunned some developers, and the platform is just not as open.
But now what about this thing with Real Networks opening up Rhapsody so that people don't have to download anything in order to listen?
Rhapsody is a very interesting phenomenon. I don't know if you've tried it yet. It's fascinating.
Yeah,
they have this marketing deal right now where they're giving people 2 weeks for free, and you don't even have to give a credit card, which makes me very happy.
You can just download songs?
You just download songs and listen. And the software actually works. You would think it doesn't, but, you don't download the songs. You stream them.
You stream them.
If you try to download them, all sorts of bells and whistles go off, and the police show up at your door because you don't have the rights to them. And, of course, the truth is when you try to download them, that's when they say, give us 99 cents. Come on, you can do it. And it's an interesting business model.
Wow. So, it's very interesting how these titans of the computer world battle with each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to talk about when we come back extra charges on your credit card that you have no idea are being billed to you when you travel abroad, and also this whole thing about cell phone bills, the names and numbers that you've called on your cell phone being available for purchase. I'd like to know why and how and what do I need to know about this? And Bob Sullivan is going to tell us about that in just a minute. It's 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Today, the president will be holding one of his anti-Social Security rallies in Memphis, Tennessee. Brendan, can you set the scene for us, buddy?
Well, it's not just Bush. There's already hundreds of Republicans on the scene. And there's a large group in front. They're coming forward. Looks like they're singers. I can kind of hear them. Let me listen in. I think they're singing something.
Oh, man, that can't be good.
Well, Mark, despite the ominous singing, I'm hopeful that we're not going to see a repeat of yesterday. There are just some people singing here. There are some old people, but there's no elaborate stage or platform or anything like yesterday. It's just kind of an extended orchestra pit, pit of some kind, I guess. And now they're just...
What, Brendan, what the hell happened? Was that a gun?
I think they're shooting. They're shooting people. Republicans have lined them up along a pit. They're just shooting them one by one.
Oh my God! You're freaking me out, man.
No.
Are you serious?
Hey, what's going on? I'm just talking to my friend here.
Hey, give me that.
No. I'm cool. I hate old people, man. You can shoot them all you want. I don't care. I'm cool.
Oh, okay. You hate old people? You think you hate old people?
Yeah, man.
Come shoot some.
No.
Oh my God, Brendan.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right. It's 35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here in real time with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Our guest is Bob Sullivan, MSNBC tech and consumer affairs correspondent, the author of Your Evil Twin Behind the Identity Theft Epidemic. We're talking about just how out of the loop I am as a 42-year-old guy. I know that once you adapt to the technology that eventually, you know, you integrate into your life. Old Riley here was like, I'm never getting an iPod.
You notice what he said, Old Riley?
It's a work of the devil. You got to feel
not
more.
Bill O'Reilly. Old Riley.
Yeah.
But you got to feel a little more out of the loop than me in terms of what you grew up with. I mean, I have not adapted to the conveniences that this affords us. I don't know where, I guess like you, I spend a little more time contemplating one way or the other as opposed to plugging myself into something. And then the fear of all this is something you're going to tell us about now. Like how the hell is it possible that somebody can independently buy my cell phone bill? And why would they?
Well, how it's possible is, I don't even have to really explain it. I would just invite anyone who's listening to go to a web browser and go to Google or Yahoo or whatever and type in cell phone bills and hit return and just see what happens. And you'll be shocked. And
Riley, get on that.
Yeah. And I really insist. I mean, I can talk about this and I have, you know, everywhere that I go, but until you see it yourself, you won't believe what's out there. There are hundreds and hundreds of websites. Most of them are digital private investigators who will sell anyone's cell phone bill from last month, 3 months ago, a year ago.
Wow. So what is this service? What does it do outside of private investigators or outside of jealous spouses or suspicious spouses? Who is buying the cell phone bill?
Or just curious neighbors, anyone involved in a lawsuit. You mentioned jealousy. That's a big cause for it. You know, why you would do this, if you're in a nasty child custody lawsuit. Yeah, anyone can do
your
it.
Your boss, yeah.
Plus 100
law
bucks.
Enforcement, anybody can find out. And so many people use their cell phone as their only phone.
That's right.
Are you on there now?
Who?
Are you on the internet? Did you go to it?
No.
He's listening to music on his iPod.
No music on the iPod.
You never know what's coming out of his earphones either, man. He runs the gamut, boy.
Yeah, I try to do it.
Now, what's going on here is it's called pretexting, and so if somebody wants to get... you know, Bill O'Reilly's cell phone records or my cell phone records, they just call up, you know, whoever the cell phone provider is, and they say, you know what, it's Bob Sullivan here, and I lost my bill from last month. I want to make sure you guys get paid, so can you fax me another copy? And you know what, I'm not in the office today. I'm out at a consulting gig, so fax it to this number. And the truth is, probably the first four or five customer service representatives they get on the phone won't go for that, but 9 o'clock on a Friday night, after four or five tries, they'll get someone who will, and that's how they make their $100.
I can't. Wow. How do you protect your autonomy? Is there any way that what is really mine? How do I protect my identity on?
What is really mine? I think that's a critical question. Well, the right to privacy in America, we go back and forth on this debate all the time. It's not necessarily spelled out in the Constitution. It has been spelled out in Supreme Court rulings. But the question is, whose information is this? It is my opinion, and it's just an opinion, but it's my opinion that your data belongs to you.
Yeah.
And you should have control over who has it, who makes money off of it, and what happens to it. But there is no precedent for that, and that is actually not the case right now. Very different in Europe. In 1998, a European Union passed some very strict rules about privacy. We haven't adopted them here in the United States, and this is the fruit of that.
But how the hell do you even enforce this stuff? I mean, it seems to me that there is so much chaos, and there are so many different ways to get information that to consolidate in terms of legal action would be almost impossible.
It is a very big problem, but I think that's the attitude of most people at this point is we throw our hands up, and you know, it was Scott McNeely at Sun Microsystems who said, "You don't have any privacy, get over it." Right? The famous statement from 10 years ago. But in most European countries, there is a cabinet level position, essentially called the privacy commissioner or something similar, who will actually audit companies and who's responsible and will enforce a lot of these regulations and rules. Right now, we don't have any government agency that is sticking up for us in terms of privacy, and that's at least a start. We can't afford to just throw our hands up and surrender all of this.
Now, Bob, what I'm trying to figure out is, do the companies involved here, the wireless companies, do they have a liability for that one person? Because you said, you know, at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, somebody may give this information up.
Right.
Does that make the company that person works for liable for giving that information up? If the company rule is that everybody else knows that they're not supposed to give it up, and this one person does, doesn't that kind of expose them to some form of liability?
Well, liability is only in the strength of your legal team, right? So that's one of the problems there. But there are some very celebrated cases. The murder of Amy Boyer about 5 years ago, her personal information was purchased online from what's known as a data broker.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, she had a stalker, an online stalker, who eventually murdered her outside of her place of employment. She's sort of the classic celebrated internet murder case, terrible story. And the company that sold her information has been sued and lost. So there's a situation of liability there. But, you know, that was a four-year lawsuit, and that's obviously a very dramatic case. Generally speaking, you know, companies do this stuff, and they don't have to own up to it.
I'm heading for the hills, man. This is it. You know, this is not worth it. I'm gonna continue to grow my hair out and grow this beard, and I'm heading for the hills. We're talking to Bob Sullivan, MSNBC tech and consumer affairs correspondent, author of Your Evil Twin, Behind the Identity Theft Epidemic. You can go to his blog at redtape.msnbc.com. Now let's shift gears here to international travel and how another way credit card companies screw you. Now I don't do a lot of traveling, but I certainly don't ever read the small print on, you know, that thing that comes with your credit card when they tell you everything, the restrictions and what they're charging you for. I imagine what you're about to tell me about is on that somewhere.
It's on that. It's the size of tissue paper.
Yeah.
Right.
You might exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Go to the bathroom with it. Well.
Yeah.
Among those long list of disclosure, now the Red Tape Chronicles, I've shifted my beat a little bit, and I've expanded beyond just technology to now to anything that really ticks off consumers. And as it turns out, I'm going to be busy for a long time.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I imagine.
The phrase that I've taken to use here is just general corporate sneakiness.
Yeah.
And we have this culture now where companies pretty much feel like they can charge us whatever they can get away with, completely separated from the cost of their doing business or the cost of the goods or services. So here's a classic case. If you travel overseas and you use your credit card, with almost every credit card, you will be paying a 3% surcharge on that charge. Now, you might say, well, okay, I know it costs money to convert currency, so 3% isn't too bad. Fair enough. But until very recently, this 3% charge was not even disclosed to you in your credit card bill. It was essentially scrounged into the conversion rate that appeared on your credit card bill. So you were paying a 3% surcharge, but you had no idea that you were.
Well, now, look, are there people out there that can, outside of you and obviously your website, but I'm imagining that, you know, people who are financial advisors, people who are budgetary advisors for families or individuals that want to try and tighten this up a little bit, they've got to be up to date on an awful lot of information now.
Well, I think it gets harder and harder to do an honest assessment of what things will cost you every month. Your cell phone bill is a really great example. I mean, you sign up for $49.95.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to spend $6,000 before you get it right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, next thing you know, you thought you had unlimited text messages, but your unlimited text messages suddenly cost you $45 for some reason this month.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is why I know this is a very rich beat, because I can't mention any of these topics on a plane or a subway without people coming up to me and telling me another horror story about some shocking bill that they had last month.
Now, Bob, when we talk about credit cards here, this is credit or debit or just credit card?
Well, you know, that's a big deal. There's credit, there's debit, and there's ATM cash withdrawals.
Yeah.
All of them have slightly different fee structures. But as it turns out...
Fee structures?
Fee structures, oh, yeah.
They charge you for all of it.
A fee. I thought you said V, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm out of the loop. What's a V structure?
Oh, you don't have a V chip?
I don't know. Where's that at? Help me!
Talk about the V chip next week. Now, the fee structure, I mean, for example, and well, first of all, the only advice I can really give people listening is before you travel, you've got to call your credit card company. And here's the bad news. You very likely will not get the right answer from the first person who answers the phone, because they often don't know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But your ATM withdrawal, for example, at a lot of banks now, it's a 3%. I'm sorry, it's a $3 fee plus a 3.5% surcharge.
Oh.
When you're converting currency from another machine. And we were, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was basically free, and everyone who was traveling overseas was told, use your credit card, that's how to get the best rate. Not quite as true anymore.
Well, it's amazing to me that, like, just the fact that you can call customer service, maybe not even talk to somebody who's even in this country, or or is just being subcontracted or outsourced.
Or in India,
In India, to tell you about these things, that there is no concern for consumers, there's no concern for citizens, we have an administration that panders to corporations, and we're just this, we're like the raw material, they're just mining our money. There is no concern about actually treating us like people or helping us solve problems. They just want to mine our money.
Well, here's what I agree with your perspective there. And what is very frustrating to me about this whole area is that what the response I get often is, well, the free market will take care of this. If you don't like your 3% fee, go to another credit card. A free market only exists when there is fair and open regulation
exactly.
for everyone. And we don't have that.
Now, Bob, wasn't there an instance where one of the credit card companies actually had to refund money to customers because they had taken it under false pretenses?
Well,
taking it without telling anybody?
Finally, a lawyer figured out what was going on here and started suing MasterCard and Visa for part of this 3% fee I'm talking about. MasterCard and Visa get 1% of that, and your bank gets 2%. MasterCard and Visa were sued successfully in California under the Unfair Trade and Deceptive Practices Act, and was ordered by a judge to pay $800 million back to consumers, $800 million refund, essentially. That's still being held up in the court. MasterCard and Visa are appealing that decision. And there's no telling. That was, in fact, 18 months ago.
That was a state court.
That was a state court.
So there's no federal.
There's a federal lawsuit, a federal antitrust lawsuit in that case as well. That
okay.
has not been settled yet.
You know, here's a scary thing. On top of everything we're talking about, households are now spending a record 13.6% of their disposable income to service their outstanding debt, and they keep screwing us. And there is very little justice happening. I hope that we can get some law enforcement around what you're talking about, around, you know, at least, you know, protecting our identity, protecting our information, protecting our intellectual property, I guess it would be, just protecting our privacy, for God's sakes.
Yeah, all of those. Consumer debt is a ticking time bomb in our country.
It really
is.
Wow. No kidding. Yeah. And now legislation to protect the credit card companies, enable them to keep escalating.
Harder to file bankruptcies now.
Yeah. The environment
is getting harder and
what
harder.
What are they trying to do? They're just going to make...
They're only trying to make money.
That's all it is.
Yeah,
But they're killing people. They're killing people. Oh, listen, now everything's turned. It turned into a nice sort of Consumer Reports kind of segment. It's like, the credit cards are killing Americans. All right. Well, look, Bob Sullivan, thank you so much for being
with us. Thanks, Bob.
RedTape.MSNBC.com is his website. The book is Your Evil Twin, Behind the Identity Theft Epidemic. Always informative and good talking to you.
Thanks for being here, man.
47 past. We're going to have News Daddy in here. We got to celebrate. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
into prenuptial agreements. Let's talk about that.
Wait a minute. You know,
that's where I'm coming from. That's where I'm coming from. Right. Until I can find someone willing to understand what a prenuptial agreement is about, then...
Then
we'll wait until we get
the Gilman treasure will be
shared. I'll stay single.
You'll stay single.
I can do bad all by myself.
The Gilman estate.
That's right.
The Gilman estate. Wow.
I ain't losing nothing at this point. I paid enough the last time. Sent her back to her country.
Sent her back to her country?
I did.
What, Hartford?
No, the Dominican Republic. You know?
Oh, yeah. You weren't married to her.
Well, it was like a marriage.
It was
cost
like
me $40,000. Why are we talking about me?
You took that deduction off your last apartment.
We are doing a network program, Mark Riley.
I know, man.
Why are you talking about?
This is all about news,
Daddy.
With
the white guy.
It's about you.
You see, you get black.
You got too many lines in the last bit. That's why I did it. If you want to know, I'm calling my agent. That's why.
You can finish the show by yourself.
Guys, don't be hating on each other.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, 53 past the hour, we're going to land this thing. But more importantly, Mark Riley and myself, Mark Maron, and the rest of the gang here, Kalo and P.W. McDonald and Little Goliath and Boy Genius John Crimmings want to say happy birthday to News Daddy himself, Wayne Gilman.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Wayne.
Please don't break out in song.
Happy birthday to you.
What did I say?
Happy birthday.
Well, now, this is Pearl Harbor Day.
I know, it's Pearl Harbor Day.
You were
64
born 10 years to the day.
Why must you bring that up,
Wait,
Riley?
You're 45, you know? Right?
I'm 45. Yeah, that's right. That sounds right.
No, my play's 45.
it's a good feeling, you know. Yeah. I mean, to live this long and experience half the many things that I've gone through in my life.
Well, in your mind, Wayne, as a news broadcaster and as somebody who has lived at least 50 years.
Yeah, at least.
you're really rubbing
it in, you know?
I'm trying to be nice.
Okay.
He's rubbing it in.
Yeah, I know. Well, I expect that from him, you know.
What do you mean?
I expect that from you.
What time are you going on your cruise?
At least 50 gives you a wide berth. You know what I mean? You could be 51. I'm not even going to ask you how old you are.
Please. No, I'm 45.
We'll stick with that. So what was one of the most impactful stories or one of the most monumental things that you remember out of your life that changed your life?
There's so many different stories that we've covered over the years, and we're talking about, 33, 34 years now.
Yeah.
I guess one of the biggest events was when I started in the business. I had covered a school boycott out in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Canarsie,
Brooklyn.
I remember that.
And I fell victim to what I thought was blatant racism then, you know, as being a young black reporter covering a dispute involving a relatively mixed neighborhood, but they just didn't have the passion or the compassion to understand how that two groups could come together and live in peace and harmony. There was so much discord then. And I accidentally walked in. It was just a very sobering thing because I had never witnessed anything like that.
Wow. And you guys have worked together for how long?
A number of years.
Now, you want to tell them about Jamaica?
I said that was the last thing. I covered the elections in 1980
in Jamaica. Was life-threatening
God's honest truth. I was on the island no more than 15 minutes coming from the airport, and guns were placed in my face.
Oh, my God.
You know, my luggage stripped, people wanting to know how I was going to vote the next day. The election was taking place the following day.
Wow.
They couldn't discern that I had an American accent and could care less who I worked for.
Right.
You know, I had never seen third world politics up front like I had covered
that. Well, thank God you lived, and happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Wayne.
It's over already?
Yeah. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. At his trial yesterday, Saddam Hussein said he would refuse to return to what he called an unjust court when it reconvened today. Saddam also complained that he had been deprived of shower and exercise facilities. Addressing Saddam's demands, his attorney said, if his client doesn't get at least 20 minutes of Pilates and stretching every morning, he gets cranky. Saddam vowed he would not show up for the rest of the trial, prompting a call from Scooter Libby to his attorney asking if such a strategy was feasible. In a speech in Havana, Fidel Castro referred to Florida Governor Jeb Bush as the fat little brother in Florida. Jeb is in noticeably worse shape than his brother George, who keeps fit by dragging the entire nation through the mud. God. Promoting its new Chronicles of Narnia film to Christian audiences, Disney is sponsoring a contest for the best sermon which incorporates Narnia themes. Grand prize is a trip to London and $1,000 cash. One minister said, if you make it $2,000, I'll throw in the Jews killing Jesus and abortion is just for whores. Meanwhile, Universal is trying to market their new King Kong to Christian audiences by telling them the 25-foot-tall ape, that incredibly awesome, that the telling them a 25-foot-tall ape that's incredibly awesome is proof of intelligent designer, or at least a CGI genius. Wow. That was a long way to go. I don't even have time for the phrase of the day. Wake up, sheeple. It's Wayne Gilman's birthday.
Yeah. All right.
He's 45 years old today.
That's
News
right.
Daddy.
Now we got an action-packed show tomorrow, Mark.
All right.
Guess who's coming in?
Who?
Senator Russ Feingold actually be on the phone.
Oh,
we're
going
to talk to him. That's going to be fun. Happy birthday, Wayne. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.